Okay, now we come to the first chart in the second section, which is the long-term performance of the VUSTX bond fund. And you'll notice that I have a couple of notes relative to the dot-com bubble peak and the real estate bubble peak, and those refer back to the advanced decline T-chart, which also has the bubble. It has four bubble peaks in it, which represent the four important bubbles that we've gone through. And this chart also shows a 52-week moving average, and it shows that the price of the adjusted bonds has had a six-fold gain over 20 years. And the I'll make a few comments about that, and that the relationship between the dot-com and then the new work that we're doing. Remember that in last week's presentation, I showed that there was a way you could construct T's and an oscillator based on the performance of this fund, which is its price performance. It's going to be the first topic that I do because in my company, it adopts a strategy which is suited to bear markets. From the outset by being in two-thirds in bonds and one-third in gold. And since this is two-thirds and it does seem to be the most promising one for the T's, for T-theory research, it's the one that we're going to be focused on. The interesting thing about the bond funds is that this VUSTX, the Vanguard Long-Term Treasury Bond Fund, like most funds, usually has a price quoted around $10. They usually start, when they start out a mutual fund, it's $10. And then since the only thing they do is to pay out interest, they'll earn like in the past they were earning 4 or 5%, 6% per annum. The price would stay constant and they just could pay out, what they would do is they would pay out interest. And this interest never shows up in the price, so it makes it difficult for people to understand where the gains are getting, how they're getting compounded. And so what they do is, rather than include it in price, it's assumed that that interest that you get is reinvested in the bonds, and so you get more shares. And it can't show that on the chart. So what they do is they adjust the backward price in order to compensate for the fact that this this income flow was coming in. And you can see that in this chart, if you follow back on the price scale, you can see back to 1990, it was just before 1991, it was $2.5, whereas it's now almost $12.5, or it's about $12.5. So what they've done is they keep reducing the. If you go back to 1991, the price of the fund was $10. So if you get it out of a newspaper or something from that time era, it'll give you a price that's somewhere around $10. So you can go to Yahoo Financial and you can, if you put the symbol in, you can get the adjusted price for almost any investment. And what it does is it allows you to make compound growth estimates, which you have to do when you manage your money. And if you take this one and you see that it went back, the adjustment price was down around $2 and you go up to $12, then you have a 2 to 12, which is a ratio of 6. And if you want to compute that, you just take the logarithm of 6 and you divide it by the number of years, 20, and then you come to the anti-logarithm back up again and you'll get the compound growth rate, which I think my math is correct, is 9.3% per annum. So that's a long roundabout way of saying that this curve in here demonstrates a average compound growth of 9.3% over the 20-year time span. It has a tendency to fluctuate because the prices are quite volatile in long-term bond funds, but they're not as volatile as the stock market. There's no, for example, there is no history of any bear market in this entity. If you look at the dot-com bubble peak and you don't see anything bad happening, and if you look at the real estate bubble peak, you don't see anything happening here, whereas if you go back to the advanced decline thesis, you can see big disasters and bear markets. So the very fact that it's a steadily increasing event and it has a compound growth rate, which is not as good as common stocks, people got spoiled back in the 80s, 80s and 90s. They expected 20%, but if you go back from 1926 to the present, or you did it up to before that big run up, or you include the modern history of it, the accepted number for blue chips is about 10% per annum. So what's happening is the people that scan tables and say, "How come I'm not making money?" See this, something like this that's yielding 9+%, and they see it doesn't have any fluctuation in it, and it becomes a no-brainer that they're just leaving to go to some kind of a bond fund. You can get into more speculative areas where you go to zero coupon bonds or other ones, but this is a conservative measure. And if you use the T's in it, you can maybe sidestep some of these declines, where it starts to give back a lot of the gains by using the T's to take out the top dates. But basically, it's just a sane way to go whenever you get into a bear market. And the fact that these bubbles when they break do not show up in the bond price, that they show up as the chatters. So the chattering you have to put up with, but you don't have to put up with anything else. And the fact that they promise to give you back the money that you have had that you put in as a by the time the bond matures, and they don't do that in the stock market is what they're really looking for. So this is a very long-term process. Now, Jeremy Siegel, who is the you might have read, is talking about this as a bond bubble, and because basically, if you look at what has happened to the bonds, is they've started to rise up very quickly, but it's risen back to the point where it was at the end of 08. So I mean, it's just now going into new highs. That's not really a bond bubble. That's a surge coming in a T. That has a lifetime. Projected top date, which we get the chart up and we do it in research, we'll narrow it down, but it's in the June, July of next year time period. And I expect that the bonds are just going to sustain themselves up time until that time point in time. And then that is going to be like a little mini bubble, and it will have some kind of a collapse. And if that all works out, then what you're going to have is that you're going to have a place where the yields are going to be extremely low. Because as the price goes up, the yields go down, and low yields on the common stocks, I mean low yields on the alternative long-term treasury bonds make them very overpriced and not desirable to own. And if you simultaneously have a bear market in the common stocks, which causes their price to go down but their yield goes up, you can have a crossover point someplace out in the summer of next year in which you're going to get a better view of the common stocks. And at that point, these T's which we can construct going back into 94, which I started to do in last week's presentation, you'll be able to know when to cut it off. And at that point, you then have an opportunity to say whether there would be a rally, or if you want to stay within the context of bonds, you can then go over to the high yield bonds because they, under certain circumstances. So that's just the big picture. The second reason for going into looking at the bonds, where I'm going to do daily charts and draw very, very carefully in where the cash buildup lines and so forth, is that there is evidence in this chart that if you draw a cash buildup line, this is a weekly chart, but you do it in a daily chart, like you're looking at the volume oscillator. In the volume oscillator, you can draw your trend lines, but you don't know whether the T is bearish or bullish. Okay. In this one, they're always bullish. So every time you cut the trend line, they just go up. Sometimes they go up a lot, and sometimes they go up a little bit. It's kind of jerky, but they always go up because you're entering this long-term deflationary environment in which interest rates just gradually decline. The total rise here is indicative of steady decline in interest rates. So you don't get rid of the problem of having to deal with that, and that makes the breakout of the cash buildup line a significant event. And you can see why it would be useful to know that, because if you look at the breakout that we had in detail, you see it always comes back around the 52-week moving average, which is the blue line. And then when it breaks out, you find out that that breakout is caused by very sophisticated bond people seeing something they don't like. And they're very good at seeing things that they don't like earlier than anybody else. This bond breakout did not occur after the April top for the stock market. It occurred before the April top. And if you go back to various places where you're going to have these real estate bubbles and so forth break out, you'll find out that if you were following those and you decided that it would be a good time to buy the bonds because they were burning to break out into a T, that's precisely the time, or it's a little bit earlier than the bubble broke. See, so if you adopt the theory that it would be good to chase the bond T's, it's an indirect way to say that what you wanted to do was that the stock market would probably had a problem. So one of the things you eventually want to do is correlate the breakouts and the T's with the breakouts with the breakdowns in the stock market, and then you also want to correlate the peaks that you're going to get out of these T's with bottoms in the stock market, because the for example, you can see that big peak that we had at the end of 2008, which was basically the same level. It was around $12, and so forth. That is the early indication of a bottom. Bottom didn't occur until 3 months later in early March of 2009. But if you have a peak in bonds, it's almost like you're being told early that there's a stock market low coming. So I'm of the opinion that you probably, if you look at the big advanced decline T picture, that market wants to break badly. It's completely consistent. They want to go into bonds, so it's perfectly consistent to be there. And if the T works out on the projection basis, and what you do that is you draw all the other T's in and you find out where the errors are and try to minimize them by adjusting the parameters, then you essentially found out the where the low is, or where a beginning point for a low is. That is the biggest thing that's biggest project, because for a third reason why that's the biggest project is that is a different way to do what is in my archives called the interest rate T's. The holy grail in T theory is to find if you go back and, for example, look at the advanced decline T's, there's rules for bringing those advanced decline T's that give you where all the tops are. Okay, this one doesn't look like it's getting to a top because it's under a lot of pressure for the bottom zones. But if you have what I think could be the most historically fast bear market that you ever seen down there, what you'll find out is even though it's rolling over early, what you see in the end is so catastrophic on the downside that it doesn't make any difference that it was off a little bit on the upside. It's because the magnitude of the decline could be so great. In that event, what you're going to end up with is a opportunity and I don't know whether it's a good opportunity or a bad opportunity, because we don't have a forecast that has any kind of a bottom. We have a forecast of a bottom that goes to 2013, maybe to the end of 2012. But you have to stay on your toes on this, because if you do get a bond price which is too high and a collapse sets in, then you have to go into the next picture, which is the which means that you have to go look around for something. What you do is you get out of the treasury bonds, because they're going to form a top, and when they back out, there is the reasonable chance that the confidence indicator chart, which is next, has an opportunity in it. Or if you don't want to take that out, you don't have to do anything. But the Fidelity High Capital Income is an opportunity that is more secure than trying to go after common stocks. That's the important thing. Here in this chart, I try to get to this chart once every month, so I have to come back and talk about this chart. Here, You know, self-explanatory as far as the idea of a confidence indicator. If you look at the most recent history where you're starting the new decline, I had hopes that that the rally that was coming here would be able to break the moving average, which is a 52-week if it's a 52-week exponential moving average, and that has not transpired. It's not really a problem of the Fidelity Capital Income Fund is not yet seen a problem. People are very yield conscious, and you know it's yielding 6.5%, around 6.5% now, which is, if you're looking for yield, that's a good number. And so it's in the sideways pattern, the same as the stock market is concerned. What's happened is that the bonds are exploding in price, which is dropping their yield. And since this is it's divided by the Treasury bond fund, you're dividing it by a bigger number. So the denominator is getting to be a large number. So it's pulling it down. So in this case, what you're saying is this is a lot. If you could follow the parallel of the Barnes confidence indicator, which was done in the yields of high quality versus lower quality bonds, that was done in a ratio of interest rates. And here we're using prices for the two opposite categories. What's happening is it's not so much a loss. It is a loss of confidence, but you could also restate it as it's a flight to safety. It's a flight to quality, a flight to safety. They just don't like what they see is coming, and so it's an indication that the whole market is very jittery, and it's looking for a place to jump. And it's obvious that it's jumping it's more obvious they're jumping into bonds than it is obvious that they're jumping into gold, and that's because the gold can never provide a income. Gold bars, even in the mining stocks, don't have much of a dividend. So, what people want, and there's no guarantee that gold will. If you buy gold at $1,200, there's no guarantee that 10 years from now they'll give it back to you for $1,200. Whereas if you buy a bond for $1,000, and it matures in say a decade, they'll give you $1,000 back in the gold. The only risk that you have is you have inflation, which degrades the true value of the yield. But that's not a problem now because you went into a deflationary environment. So this is the situation that you're caught up in. The question then becomes: if you do have this very severe decline, how would you know that you have an opportunity? And the answer is: the opportunities have in these previous lows only come if the yield on the capital and income fund gets above the historic interest. At 10% per annum is the break point for all of the analysis, because it is the historic return for common stocks, and you're at 6.5% now. But if you have a substantial drop in the stock market, and the Fidelity Capital and high income high yield fund drops, you know, it's the same thing. They're paying out 6.5%. Well, if that fund was to be cut in half in price, the yield, and there was no other changes in the dividends that they were getting, then the yield would double that, so that would be to 13%. Well, any of these bottoms usually get over 10%. 13% is not an unusual number. That was available at the end of that one. So if you get into June, July of next year, the question is, what's the yield on this? And what's the level of the confidence indicator? If it's down near the old lows, that's good. If it's not down there, it's probably just a rally, and there isn't anything to give you. You know, the yield on the high yield bond funds is like, you know, like 8 or 9%. You wouldn't think that was far enough, and you just kind of go with the 2012, 2013 type low, and just say it's probably a recovery rally. But if you can push this down into the real high valuation area, which is over 10% for the high yield fund, then you start talking about opportunities. And what I've done is I've put the four indicators for the adjusted price into the advanced decline T's chart this last couple of months, and they are the VUSTX, and the high yield Fagex, also Tocqueville Gold, which is the mining stock, and GLD. And I have the history going back for as long as I want to. The gold history will go back into 70s, into the early 70s, but the rest of it goes back into the origin of the fund, which for Fagex is 77, and for the quality bond fund is back to 1991. So you can get a lot of history, but that's good enough for our purposes. So this is the that's the situation that you're going in, and it starts out as a flight. In this chart, you start out seeing a flight to quality, and then if the market starts coming down, the one other item which we have is you don't have to have a new recession, since the National Bureau of Economic Research has, who diligently follows their responsibility is gauging when the in retrospect when recessions start and when recessions end by doing a detailed analysis, sort of a postmortem on the individual components in great economic detail. After we went off the 12th advanced decline T, they will look back over history, and they were able to see how, as you were going to the end of 07 and entering into 08, that they saw the criteria for the end of the last economic expansion, the beginning of a new one. When the market came out of this recent low, it's been generally assumed that you were in a recovery mode, but they have never found anything to believe that there is a there was not the signs of a true recovery started. So they have not put an end to the recession that we used to be in. At least they had done that up to a month ago. So things are turning down again. So what they're saying is the whole thing is one long recession that started early 08. It had started by early 08, and as far as they're concerned, is in progress. And so you don't have to do anything as far as saying, is you think that there's going to have a recession. That's why they call it a double dip. It's not a back-to-back recession, because the other one didn't end. It's just a continuation of the other one. So there you get the problem with you get there is if you get another a harder recession coming in, you'd say that the first phase you got the unemployment rate up to 10%, and now if you put this on back, it's going to go to 15%, which is the 15%, or maybe it's going to go higher over time, and that's a depression. Those numbers don't come up in recessions; they come up in depressions, and that's going to validate the 80-year cycle work, which I probably get to next couple of weeks. As soon as we get past the first of July, I mean the first of September, and we see what the first break is going to be, unimpeded by these little T's that seem to be trying to hang on, then we'll start getting into that one. But that's where you're going to end up going. And if you go there, it would seem very likely that some of these bond numbers are going to get explosive for the conservative side. And then at some point, whether it's June, July next year or not, what you're going to do is you're going to get the Fagex, which I take as my conservative form of a junk bond fund, is going to go up to the kind of numbers we saw before, which is like 15% rate of return. And then you start getting into an interesting case where you can start actually dissecting the history and start finding opportunities for recoveries, and you just see how it plays out. So anyway, the whole thing's a mess, disaster waiting to happen here. But that, you can't do anything else with it, because we're in that position, and that's the product of the 40-year cycle, and it's going to be everything has been done in my company, so that we're all set for it. And we're not particularly concerned with that, and looks like it's going to be a bad time for everybody in concern. But it's fairly obvious that the only strategies that work on the downside are going to be shorting high yield bonds, and then the hardest one to do will be to try to figure out whether the gold wants to go up, or whether the gold wants to lay back and wait to find out whether it's a real horror story before it goes up. But we'll tackle those once we get into the month of September. Okay, thanks for checking in. We'll be back next Sunday. And, of course, we can follow up on whether this little oscillator bottom pattern is held up in the Wednesday update, which will look at Monday and Tuesday's data. But you probably know that. You don't have to keep the oscillator to see that, because it either turns around on Monday or Tuesday, or you're losing it as we in the early part of the week. Okay, back next Sunday. Bye-bye.